This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by Mook Delivery, bringing you the food you love. Mook Delivery, like McKenna, brings a top-tier lineup. With Leif Davis-esque delivery right to your door, you'll always be winning with Mook Delivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Ipswich Town go full on Grinch 2 days before Christmas and serve up a turkey a couple of days early. Welcome to the Blue Monday podcast. Hello and welcome to the Blue Monday podcast, following the fortunes of Ipswich Town since 2015. I'm Craig Fimbo. It's Christmas Eve, and with me are my little helpers, David Diamond and Joe Fares. Merry Christmas to you both, first and foremost. How are things going in your relative households? Joe Fares, is it ramping up? Are the excitement levels reaching crescendo just yet?
Yeah, not quite crescendo yet, but they are working towards it as we speak. I can feel the sort of decibel levels rising outside the room where I'm recording this. But sadly, I can't hide out in here all day long because I am tasked with cooking Christmas dinner tomorrow. I've already got a gammon in the slow cooker ready for the side event, and I've now got to get out there and sort my gravy and my sprout gratin out ready for tomorrow.
Oh, beautiful! Cover stuff in cheese, mate. Anything is edible, isn't it? Similar to yourself, I'm cooking. One of the many downsides of being married to a vegetarian is they don't know how to cook meat particularly well. So, yeah, rest your turkey for as long as it cooks. That's what Gordon Ramsay has been telling people. So there's my tip for the day. And David, how are things your side? I suppose you've got an excited grandchild. Are they?
We'll be seeing her, I think, briefly tomorrow, then on Boxing Day, so that's kind of nice. If it wasn't for, I think, little Rosie with Christmas, would obviously, my boys are much older. Well, one's not left home now, so yeah, I can only imagine, or I can only just about recall the excitement levels of probably 20 years ago, maybe even 25 years ago now. So I know what Joe's about to face, but no, all good. Finished work nice and early on Friday, having a nice day, presents wrapped, and then along came Leeds.
Yeah, well, we'll briefly go across that 5 minutes or so. I think we'll give that towards the end of the show. firstly, we'll talk about a bit of news. I know the guys in the pre
just quickly with regards to my Christmas dinner. I have the extra problem that my father-in-law is a Leeds fan, and they came round to watch the game yesterday, and I was getting stressed. And after the first goal, I just took myself up to my bedroom to watch the game on my own. And I didn't come down until they'd left. So I now have to sort of come down. They're round for Christmas dinner, so I will have my tail between my legs as they turn up on tomorrow, sort of lunchtime, ready for it. But I'll just ignore that I hid in my room for 2 hours yesterday and just carry on with the day as normal.
It'll be very reminiscent of the Paul McCartney Pipes of Peace video, won't it? There'll be like this meeting across no man's land of, not the Germans and the English, but yeah, the Ipswich and the Leeds across the, in the mud. So when you serve him up that extra bloody bit of turkey, you can just say, oh no, it's just a bit of cranberry sauce being left over there.
I'm interested in the sprout gratin. I think we need to know that recipe, Joe, because sprouts to me are the devil's work, but sprout gratin sounds fantastic. Let's just go on to Christmas recipes. Sod the football. Come on.
Well, we're always looking to expand, aren't we? So we can add, along with the Potmaster group, yeah, we'll add a Joe's Christmas fair, I was going to say there. Right, anyway, yeah, let's talk about football for a little bit before we go back to sprouts. The guys spoke about it briefly on the pre-match pod, but I won't read your fellas' input as yet. There were a couple of bits of news dropping leading up to the weekend, one of which was related to international call-ups. And we'll also talk about the little bit of news that broke before the match, I think it was yesterday as well. Massimo Luongo announced his international retirement, which I think was a surprise to a few people, and a pleasant surprise maybe to Ipswich fans and the Ipswich management. Joe, that was good news, I think, from our perspective. How do you see that helping us from here on in?
It was great news, isn't it? Because he's such an important player for us in that midfield. Him and Sam Morsia formed a brilliant partnership, and we've got games coming thick and fast over the next few weeks leading up to it. And to lose a player of that, well, you just don't want to lose any of your regular starters for any reason, do you? And to lose him for potentially six championship games is massive. That's over a quarter of what we've got left this season, isn't it? The six games there. And it's already bad enough losing Cam Burgess, but to lose Mass would be severe as well. But I can see why he's retired. I haven't had a chance to listen to his Town TV interview, but I guess they talk about cycles in international football, don't they? And I'm sure they're working towards the cycle to World Cup 2026, something which Cameron Burgess will be hoping to be starting for Australia in, where I don't think there's any way Massimo Luongo is still going to be playing in 3 years or sort of 2.5 years' time for the national team at the age he's at. If he's only on a one-year deal here, I think he'd almost talked about heading back to Australia to retire previously when he left Middlesbrough or Sheffield Wednesday. So, yeah, I can see why he maybe is not right for this cycle, but it's obviously great for us that he hasn't gone.
Yeah, and then yesterday, Dave, there was a funny little bit of news broke that Axel Twanzabi is being called up to the Democratic Republic of Congo squad, I think, just in time for the African Nations Cup. Your knowledge of the Democratic Republic of Congo squad, how's their defensive depth looking?
I'm sure
they've got Toto Ntsiala available, haven't they? So
Toto Ntsiala, I'm sure. Isn't it a well-known thing, Dominic Republic of Congo? Is that the most popular answer on Pointless, apparently? Anyway, that was a kind of a weird one. But then later on, I think it was named in like a 45-man squad, which is 10 less than the Egyptian original squad, wasn't it? But that was kind of sort of almost shut down after the game by McKenna, wasn't it? Saying he doesn't think there's... That's quite odd, wasn't it? He sort of came out saying he does, although he'd been named, doesn't think that will happen. But I don't.
He said they've spoken about it this week, and as things stand at the moment, it doesn't look like he'll be going. But it wasn't a total rule out of it, was it?
No. But no, that did come sort of from left field somewhat, didn't it? But,
well, it came from me, because a Plymouth fan told me it, so I then messaged Phil about it for then. Kieran McKenna.
See? Yeah.
Finger on the pulse of
finger on the football.
One of my African sort of whisperers here for the Blue Monday podcast. We've got these guys set up on all different continents.
They're everywhere. Our African correspondent down in Plymouth, did you say? God, but there you go.
Well, it's closer to Africa than here, isn't it?
Well, yeah. So we again, you know, the squad depth and everything else that goes with it, we would hope that doesn't transpire.
Yeah, because it's interesting how that potentially has knock-on effects to what you do in January, isn't it? If you haven't had any inkling at all that the centre-half that you've been dripping into your squad, I know, and this probably won't happen, but, you know, just as a knock-on effect full stop, you've probably been thinking, oh, Luongo, we've been missing Luongo, as Joe said, for a chunk of the time, or we might need to worry about finding a centre midfielder. Now the need for that has maybe lessened a little bit, whereas now you think, oh, hang on a second, we might need to juggle things around and we're potentially looking at Samaran.
I wonder if he's even eligible for them as yet, because he's played for England under-21s in competitive games, which means he would have had to file a switch to be eligible. So sometimes they'll call players up that aren't eligible and try and sort of force through the paperwork quickly and stuff. It wouldn't surprise me if he isn't even eligible and it doesn't go anywhere. And that's just... these lists are so long. If you think for the England World Cup squad, they put a 55-man list together, and you look at if you think what extra players are going to be on that, I think someone like Adam Webster was on it for the World Cup, for example, where he's miles away from the team, but you have to have named 55 initially. It's a huge number of players, isn't it?
And again, further complicated by, well, potentially, Elkin Baggett off with Indonesia 1st of Jan, I think.
Yeah. Yes.
So, yeah, we would hope there's nothing in that.
And also, another bit of news the guy spoke about and was broken was that the potential of current Birmingham loanee Jay Stansfield being on our radar, as the saying goes. It's sort of been bubbling under a little bit, the name, hasn't it, guys? And obviously, the performance that he put in against us was a half-decent performance, a good goal, good little poacher's goal in the box. He just always looks like a lively pest of a player, not wishing to denigrate the work that he does, but he looks like a bit of a Jamie Vardy pest of a centre-forward who can probably play all four of our forward positions. Completely different stature of physicality to George Hurst, for example, but potentially adds a different dimension and takes a little bit of the workload off of George Hurst. So we don't know for sure whether this is anything going in it, but it's a name that was mentioned. TWTD and the East Anglian have reported the reports, if you like. But Dave, that's again a gap that needs to be filled, and potentially following yesterday's match, one of two gaps that needs to be filled.
I think so, yeah. Busy, I'd describe him. Busy, yeah. Around the box, isn't he? He scored yesterday. Watch the highlights. He got no end of grief yesterday, as you would think, from Plymouth with his obviously quite strong Exeter links with his time there on loan, and also his father being there.
He also had his shirt on underneath when he scored, which said "once a red, always a red" on it. So,
yes.
Which he showed to their fans.
Kind of incitement. But yeah, as they scored again, yes, I think he might have had an assist as well. So yeah, I quite like him. And I was you, Craig, wasn't it? I think you were championing him some weeks ago, or some months ago. And apparently, as this has broken, I think I saw on TWTD that we made inquiry for him back in 22, perhaps, I think, or certainly earlier on in the piece. So, looks a good player. Has proved he can sort of score goals at that level. So, watch this space, I think.
And I suppose, Joe, from our perspective, it's a sort of deal that we can do in January, isn't it? You see what I mean? From it's a loan. It's similar to what we did last season with both Broadhead and Hurst to a certain extent.
I know we signed Harry Clark.
And yeah, we signed them permanently, but they were recalled from an existing loan to come to us. So is that sort of, it's probably the sort of top level of player that we could probably be looking at in January, do you think?
Yeah, and also you're going to want players who have at least been around a first team squad for the first half of the season, aren't you, that are maybe not fully match fit but are close to being match fit, where he obviously is fully match fit playing week in, week out for Birmingham. But yeah, you're looking at sort of either players from the bottom end of this league, loans that can be repurposed or turn into permanents, or top League One players. So it's going to be difficult to find the right ones, isn't it?
Yeah
cool.
Right, okay, what's that? 12 minutes. Well done, guys. We've successfully managed to talk about Sprouts and the Democratic Republic of Congo for long enough. We're going to have to move on to Saturday's game, which took us to Elland Road, the home of Leeds United, who were yet to lose at home. They hadn't won the last couple of games, certainly the home game against Coventry, who were potentially slightly fortunate to get away with the point the last time out, which may have offered us some hope, along with our own away form, which wasn't too shabby, certainly in terms of points and goals conceded. You know, we're pretty watertight at home. Away. So going into the game, this was our lineup, the normal lineup. I suppose the only potential would have been, as ever, the right back, and then again that swapping of the centre-halves. Joe, how does that look to you? Is anything, any surprises, or were you happy with us going relatively strong for this with the games coming up?
I was surprised to see Tuan Zabian instead of Wolfenden. I expected it to be an unchanged team, but in this period when we've got these four games in 9 days, I think there will be some more selections which probably catch the fans out a little bit more than they have done in recent weeks, because we don't know what their workloads are like, how these guys are getting on, how fit they are, and there will be changes made which people won't see coming over the next few games.
Yeah, anything there for you, Dave? And obviously, moving on to, without knowing the result, you know, what sort of positions would you expect to be rotated in any case for the next game?
Yeah, I'd think Wolfenden will be back in for Twanzebe. Maybe potentially Williams in for Clark, I would have thought. Taylor, I would have perhaps thought in for Luongo next game. So yeah, that's what I would see. And maybe another rotation with Broadhead potentially, but I'd certainly see those three, I think.
Yeah. And Leeds themselves were as strong as they can be, I think, as well. Certainly from the front four perspective, albeit they had some artillery on the bench as well. They had some makeshift fullbacks, which, again, the guys in pre-match were hopeful that we may be able to take some advantage of. Jed Spence playing out of position on the left. Arch Gray normally out of position right as right back. As it transpired, we didn't really get too close to have a chance to get too close to those guys. But Dave, that's a pretty strong lineup for a team sitting third in the Championship, isn't it?
Potent, I think you'd describe it. And I think word about the fullbacks, I mean, how well they played yesterday. Who would have thought, you know, after watching yesterday's game, that both Gray and Spence weren't full-time fullbacks, to be fair. They were very good. That Gray's a player, isn't he, flipping it? He's not even 18 yet. Good grief. You'd think he could go the whole way. But yeah, the strong Ampadu again in midfield, and Kamara, and yeah, that front four is, yeah. Yeah, too good, isn't it? Really is.
Yeah. So yeah, the game started pretty breathlessly. To be honest, the first 5 or 6 minutes, it was two teams pressing very high and not giving either set of players much time on the ball. I think it was maybe the first 5 or 6 minutes until such time as Twanzebe actually got his foot on the ball. I know Joe was talking about potentially playing Wolfenden in that relatively calm in possession role, and I say it for the first 5 or 6 minutes, nobody, certainly in our team, was getting much of a foot on the ball. Until Chaplin got fed it on the halfway line, Dave. Nice little ball into him on his on his instep on the halfway line.
I mean, that's his trademark, isn't it? That was a good ball. So that actually Twanzebe did. Chaplin showed well for that, and it was a good ball from Twanzebe driven in, just how Chaplin likes it. And it's his trademark, outside of the foot, spin round the player, isn't he? And it done him. Clear foul. I think it was Stroik that actually makes the challenge and goes. Clearly it's a foul. Look, ref doesn't give it, and yeah, the move breaks up. It's fed to, I think it's fed wide to Somerville, and Clark covers well, but it's a corner. And yeah, I mean, yeah, irrespective of the Chaplin foul, this is poor, isn't it? It's really poor. I mean, it's a good corner, well driven in, but crikey, Pirro's pretty much got a free header from 6 yards. As someone said on the Telegram group this morning, almost a Gordon Banks-like save from Gladke, but unfortunately, unlike Banks, he doesn't sort of flick it over the bar, and it, yeah, again, it goes straight to Stroik. Ironically, goes straight to Stroik, who's, what, a yard out, and just sort of nods it in. So it's a poor, poor goal to concede, really. And the last thing we wanted, you know, 37,000 Leeds crowd, we know it's going to be intimidating. What do you do? We spoke about it, right, first 15. And we've got this habit of conceding in the first 15. Keep it tight, quiet in the crowd. Then you start to play and make your way into the game. And yeah, you're on the back foot straight away, aren't you? Especially conceding a bad goal like that. But ironically, it probably should never have been, because it's a foul on the halfway line.
Yeah, I don't think it was too far after Sky had actually showed the graphic of us being the most profligate, maybe, charitable team in the first 15 minutes of games in terms of goals conceded. And lo and behold, it happens. And Joe, I think Kieran McKenna doesn't give away too much in his post-match interviews, but you could see there was quite a lot of annoyance in him from not only conceding from conceding, as he referenced the West Brom game as well, conceding from the opposition's first corner of the match as well.
Yeah, and it's just, that is the game plan out the window there, isn't it? Because the game plan is obviously to try and quieten the crowd down and turned the crowd from a sort of 12 man to a millstone around the neck of the players, and we sort of turned them into a 12 man and a 13th man in the first 10, 15 minutes of the game. And yeah, frustrating. And I think, I know you've got to defend the corner better, but when you don't get that free kick in the halfway line, it's such a big moment because that means that the game takes a pause to breathe, doesn't it? And then you move up there and then you're in a position to try and gain some territory up the pitch. And when you don't get that, and in these games, when you're playing away against sides of the quality of Leeds, you need all the little things to go in your way, don't you, if you're going to have a chance in these games. And when things like that start going against you, then it's frustrating, but you've got to defend the corner better. I think it looks like, from one angle, sort of, I think it's Rutter maybe just sort of pushes Burns, shoves him just as he's about to try and sort of get the header above Peru as well. But it's all total wrong side for the ref. There's no way you can expect him to see it. But yeah, he sort of gets caught under the ball because he sort of gets shoved in the side. But yeah, you're never ever going to get given that.
Yeah, and we're clever at that ourselves, aren't we? In terms of our attacking corners, you know, we're pretty good at the blocking off the ball and making sure that people the not obvious run is being blocked somewhere along the line, sort of thing. So, yeah, a poor goal. And as the guys say there, it's all of a sudden that a crowd which is already up for it is even more whipped up. But saying that, things did calm down a little bit. Now, whether that's because we were getting more of a foothold in the game or whether that's because Leeds had sort of completed their initial task of the match and got the early goal and could then take a little bit of a breather and take the foot off the ball, who knows? But yeah, so for the rest of the remaining quarter of the match, I say things calmed down and things were starting to play out a little bit. Chaplin then got sided in half just outside their area, didn't he, by Ampadu, I think it was. The referee played advantage, but there was no yellow card resulting from that. That could have gone one way or the other in terms of having a free kick pulled back. But then just a couple of minutes later, Joe Somerville has the run on Clark, but from our position?
Yes, we're sort of pushing high quite up on the high on the left-hand side, don't we? And between Broadhead and Davis, they sort of get in a bit of a muddle over it, and the ball is nicked away from Broadhead, and then Davis tries to get there, but he just gets... They kept looking back to see if it was a foul, but it didn't look in any way a foul to me on Davis at all. No. And I don't think any Ipswich players appealed for it either. So it seemed a strange one that the commentators and the Sky coverage seemed to focus on. It was just a good bit of play. I think it was Gray, wasn't it? Just nicks the ball away from him, plays it. And then from that point, we are in big trouble. And you get there and Somerville's there. And Morsey's over there to give a bit of help. But very unlike Sam Morsey, he just sort of almost lets him walk past him, doesn't he? Maybe his wrong side. He's worried about getting that 10th yellow or whatever it is. But he doesn't really put any pressure on Somerville. And then it's just Somerville flying at Clark. And I don't think there's a defender in the league that can stop him in that position because he's just so quick and so tricky and so powerful. And he puts the cross across, and again it's one that whilst all that has happened, we should defend it better. It's not a particularly great ball in there. Burgess sort of dangles a lazy leg at it, and then it hits Davis. But even Davis, I think, I know it just hits him and goes in, but I think he's got to be a little bit more alert to that, doesn't he? It's not like it's not hitting from a yard away, has it? It just seemed like, yeah, they're going to tear you apart at times because of the player that Somerville is and the way they move the ball to him. But when it gets down to it, it's not like his veins running ice cold. He was putting a perfect ball in. We had chances to defend that at that point, which we then failed to do. So I think there's a few disappointments in that goal.
Yeah. And I say, it's not as if, as you're saying about when the ball gets into the 6-yard box, it's not as if Leeds had a lot of players and putting us under pressure in that 6-yard box. They themselves are probably 8 to 10 yards away. And it's, We'd actually set ourselves up quite nicely to defend that cross, hadn't we? The fact that Burgess, as you say, sort of dangles a leg and or half a leg and misses it, and then Davis probably has time to react, but probably wasn't expecting Burgess to miss it. And yeah, unfortunately, it drops in. And then poor old Davis, who's returning back to his former club, has not had the ideal start, Dave.
I don't think you can underestimate Rutter's part in that goal, because as they smuggle the ball out, I think it goes to James, and James just sort of knocks one into the halfway, and Rutter's so good, he holds off Tanzabia and knocks it off early first time, and I think it might be Ampadu, maybe Kamara, then knocks it first time as Somerville, and then he's gone. If he's got a run on Clark or whatever, he's gone. And yeah, it's not great defending, but what he does do, he puts a ball across the 6-yard box with pace, and it comes in. You know, it's not an airy fairy, just a roll ball across the box. Absolutely drives it in. And yeah, Davis, as they both picked up on, he's just facing the wrong way, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah. But then a couple of minutes after that, or maybe a minute or so after that, you want to take us through a Chaplin effort, Dave, and through to half time?
Yeah, this is superb, isn't it? I mean, this is the Davis-Chaplin combination, which we've seen so often this season. And yeah, we work the ball well. Davis gets the ball wide left. And again, you know, a measured ball in just outside the box. And it's great technique on his wrong foot as well from Chaplin, doesn't he? He hasn't got a lot of time there, controls it, absolutely smashes a right foot half volley. And yeah, just you can just see it on the, you know, behind it on Sky. It just swerves away slightly. And, you know, inside the Melier's not saving that. He's not even moving, is he? But just strikes the outside of the post, and you think then, yeah, maybe it's not going to be our day. And then what? Again, this is disappointing. The goal just on half time. It's our throw, and it's a good throw. Again, we're deep. Davis, you know, a good, really good long throw. And Burgess up centre half. Wins the first ball really well, flicks in a really good area behind him in a 6-yard box. No one's there, no one's anticipating. And it's just hacked clear. And again, this is Routier, who's just, it's a bouncing ball. And I think we spoke about this before. This is where perhaps Morsy, with perhaps one mind on his sort of yellow card situation, allows Routier to get the better of him. So any other game, and he's not on 9 yellow cards, I think he takes him out there. He just takes one for the team there. But he breaks, and again, as soon as it breaks to Somerville, his pace is just ridiculous, isn't it? And poor old Davis. Poor old Davis, to be fair, he's done well to get across and cover, but it's a clumsy challenge, and it's a penalty. Yeah, he doesn't get the ball, and he just sort of slides in, almost bundles into him, falls into him, doesn't he? And yeah, it's a clear penalty. And look at 2-0. Okay, you're holding on. Yeah, 2-0, you've got a chance. You know, you get an early goal back in the second half, you're in the game. But 3-0, and it's a clinic. You know, I don't think Klecki can be further away from a penalty. It's a really good penalty, isn't it? He goes left, and Klecki goes left, and he dispatches it in the top right corner. Yeah, it's classy.
Yeah, he didn't roll it in, did he?
He didn't, no, or other way around, whatever. But yeah, 3-0 down, it's just a killer, and yeah, game's gone.
Absolutely. Well, and the thing is as well, what was evident from that first half, certainly to my eyes, was just the press, the Leeds press. They were just on us, weren't they? They were all over. So that one Chaplin chance was the only real, well, it was one of the only real chances.
Broadhead had a decent enough effort, didn't we? Worked a sort of little situation.
Just after Chaplin was fouled, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. After that. Yeah. That was it. Yeah, where we allowed the advantage. So that wasn't that far wide, but that was it. And unfortunately, that was it.
Yeah, but I think that those two shots were our two shots for the match. Yeah, absolutely. But it was just what was evident was this physicality, wasn't it, of the Leeds team? They were big, they were strong, they were quick, when they were all over the pitch, and they were anticipating passes. And then when we did have the ball, they were on us, all over us. And obviously, being 2-0 up and then 3-0 up, the atmosphere just gives them even more energy and adrenaline to carry on.
It was similar to the West Brom game, wasn't it, where you let in that early goal, and then your game has to be perfect from that point on, because they are just monsters off the ball at you. And maybe this is the difference between, like, you've got to remember, a lot of these players are League One players last season, and they're doing fantastic this year. But when you're in those real, real tight spaces, you noted it yesterday during the game, Craig, that sort of Broadhead may be the only attacker with that real, real high technical ability, when you've got two players right on you all the time, when the pressure isn't just big pressure, it's massive pressure, that you've got to be able to keep the ball and move it on to the guys when you're actually around. Like George Hurst wasn't able to have the ball stick in that thing. Wes Burns, when he had a bit of space, he was okay. But as soon as it got to a congested area, struggled. Connor Chaplin sort of drifted in and out of the game. And Massimo Luongo in the midfield, you didn't really notice him there. So Morsy was on his own in there. And to win a game like that against a team like that with their tails up, everyone's got to be on their game, and you can't carry any, I wouldn't say passengers, because I wouldn't say they're passengers, but you can't carry any players that playing five or six out of 10. They've all got to be 7, 8 out of 10, and there weren't any 7 or 8s out of 10 yesterday, were there?
Their midfield two were massive, weren't they? Just that Ampadu's a player, isn't he? I've never really...
But it is just the little things as well, like without sort of, isn't it an excuse? But if Ampadu gets booked for that foul on Chaplin, which he should do,
it affects
right
his game.
Start of the game. It affects his game in the same way that Morsi's having to not play at his full capacity because he doesn't want a two-game suspension. And it's these little things. And for us to win there, you need all those little things, or at least the, if there's 10 little things, you need 8 of them to go your way. We probably had 2 of them go our way yesterday. And like I say, it's not the difference between winning or losing. It's the difference between us being in the game or not being in the game and giving ourselves a chance, which we may still have lost anyway.
And to be fair, you know, some of the, maybe not some of the home games, some of the away games, those little decisions have perhaps gone our way, you know.
Oh, this certainly, season. Yeah. We've certainly had more than enough.
Yeah. Yeah. It works itself out, I guess.
Yeah, you say about the ball not sticking to Hurst, it didn't particularly yesterday, but then in the first minute of the second half, it did stick to him, but he gave the ball away, and that leads to Leeds hitting our crossbar, you know, within the first minute of the second half. And again, just when you sort of, you know, as you said, Dave, the game is pretty much done and dusted, but you think, right, well, at least we can start the second half with a bit of momentum. We didn't even get the chance to do that because, again, they've hit the crossbar within the first minute, and then 5 or 6 minutes
this is a horrible goal, this one. And I mean, Burgess, you know, as we've seen, you know, where I sit at Portman Road, you know, the times I see Burgess play that ball to Davis, and all this season, it's just been, you know, we've commented this season how Burgess' technique has improved, and then nicely driven ball straight to his feet, you know, absolutely. But yeah, whether it's a bad ball, it is a bad ball. And whether Davis, who wasn't having the greatest game, is perhaps on his heels a bit. But you could look, maybe say it's great anticipation by Archie Gray, who I think's just going to be a superstar, isn't he? But, you know, wins the ball and from them, then they're off. I think it's an interchange with James. And I think Routier gets involved. And then, I mean, it corresponds. I think they get to the ball, edge of the box. They've got an overload with Somerville, I think. And they get a bit lucky here because I think Routier tries to play the ball across actually to Somerville. And Clark just sort of like, it hits Clark on the heel. I think he's going past him. He sort of sticks out his leg, hits him on the heel, and just sits perfectly for Pirro. Good finish, one touch, two touch, and just blast. Again, lacking no chance with that from about 18 yards. And you think at that stage, shit, 52 minutes gone. Boys, let's not go for 6 or 7 here because that was such was their dominance. But yeah, I think... I think already at 4-0, there was talk from certainly the Telegram group, get Morsi off, get him off. So, that happened quite reasonably early on, 70th minute, I think.
Yeah, that's right. I think that he'd had a couple of little challenges and nibbles and a little thigh into someone to knock him over. And you think, Yeah, he was very much treading that tightrope, wasn't he? And 67 minutes it was. There were 4 subs made: Jackson for Hurst, Harness for Broadhead, Hutchinson for Burns, and probably most importantly, Ball for Morsi. And that is very much, Joe, a case of that's a tacit implication that the game is now up. We are wrapping these boys in cotton wool, ready for Boxing Day.
Yeah, and I think Morsi did one more foul, didn't he? Sort of a couple of minutes before he went off. And at this point, everyone was already screaming, look, you just got to get him off and move on to Leicester. And I think had he been booked in that period, I think it would have been a real poor piece of squad management for the winter period, because the game was over. There was no need for it. The ref was sort of blowing up every time he went near someone, almost, it seemed, at one point. Like, they weren't exactly... A couple of them didn't even look like fouls. He'd sort of pulled out of them and he went down, and it's like, he's going to get booked here, and it's totally, totally avoidable. So just make sure you get him off. And McKenna did get him off, and we go again for Tuesday night at Leicester, versus Leicester.
I mean, that was the only positive thing to come out of yesterday, really, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But very much so. And that was pretty much it for the rest of the match. They did... Again, they hit the crossbar. Rutter hit the crossbar, didn't it? Deflected off Luongo and slammed against the crossbar around about the 70th minute. But yeah, that is all she wrote.
I think we barely got the ball in and around their box second half, did we? I don't think we did. Barely.
No. I said, as the guys again highlighted pre-match, I think they had 49 goal contributions from their front four before the game. Well, you can add another 3 or 4 to that total after Saturday. I'll get up Rich's favourite chart, which is the momentum chart, which very often apologies for those watching, sorry, listening on the pod, but it's very often...
I think it tells a story.
A lot of blue, yeah, but there's not an awful... Certainly that second half, look, you talk about starting the second half well and maybe clawing a goal back, that, that second half's a treat, as is the first, what, quarter of an hour, 20 minutes. It really does show the... yeah, the momentum of the...
I think the when you look at the first half and as a whole, 3-0 didn't really sum up what the first half looked like, did it? They basically took every chance they had and were sort of just better than us in the key moments, and that is a problem in against quality, and if you're not quite on it, you can be 3-0 down. But ultimately, it wasn't a 3-0 game until that point, and obviously the game state then changes how the game went from there. That like, you play that game another 10 times, you're not going to lose that 4-0 again, probably, are you? You're not going to have those issues, and not everyone's having an off day at the same time and people get dragged about. It's just, I don't know, it's just one of those days. A good day to get a few mistakes out of the system in.
Yeah. End of the game, as you pointed out earlier, Dave, before we started, end of the game with not only zero shots on target, but zero corners as well, and an XG
what was, of I didn't,
0.12, I think.
I didn't see it. What was our XG?
0.12.
Fingers in ear. Okay.
Yeah, so as Joe says, maybe hopefully a day to have got everything out of our system and refresh and take your slap and recover.
I know the fans don't always have the same approach, but I think the players and the squad have very much got the same approach of, we've lost the game, we draw a line under it, we start preparing for the next one and we move on to it. Doesn't really matter if it's 1-0 or 4-0. If you've lost, you've lost. It's 0 points. We've got 0 points. They've got 3 points. That was the worst that could happen. That has happened. We now move on to the next game. And as last two times we've lost this season, we then won 4 on the bounce straight after. So the club have been very good at compartmentalising a defeat, especially that West Brom one, because there was a big reaction to that West Brom defeat, which was of a similar vein to this, where we were just outclassed over the game and didn't lay a glove on them. They were easily able to shut that off and move on. And yeah, we've got a much harder game to move on to next. But it's one of those games coming up, Leicester, where you think it's either... We won't know this until sort of 10 p.m. Tuesday night. They're either the perfect team to play because they might treat it as a free hit and we get a good chance to get back on. And then if we win that game, you're doing well. Or it's the worst team to play because they're a quality side to come down and beat us and we lose 2 on the bounce. But I don't know. It might turn out to be a really good game to be going into that one. Sometimes the pressure, if we were playing QPR next, having lost there's so much pressure to then beat QPR, isn't there, that it's like, bloody hell, we've got to go and beat these now after losing that last game. But I think it'll work out okay.
Yeah, and as McKenna said afterwards, you know, as you guys say, it's just one of those days. You learn from it. You learn from the goals you concede. You basically have to suck it up in the second half. He basically said that, didn't he? And we just had to suck it up in the second half. We were going to lose. You go out there, you suffer, and it's all now about the reaction, whether that reaction comes Boxing Day, as you say, Joe, or whether that reaction comes in the subsequent 6 months of the season. We'll find out, won't we? And as a few guys were pointing out in the Telegram groups last night, you don't get many successful seasons without being punched in the face a couple of times throughout the course of it. And potentially that is arguably Leicester away in the next month or so is a hardest game of the season done and dusted. You've now played Leeds twice, as Rich has pointed out a couple of times. You know, you remember where we are and you get on with the rest of the season.
Yeah.
What we'll do, I'll just quickly get up the results from yesterday and Friday. I don't think there's too much to go through there. Not many surprises, I don't think, certainly from a late Plymouth goal situation. Watford, I think, drew back a couple of late goals. But I say, yeah, there's not too much there. I think Sheffield Wednesday were looking on target to creep ever closer to getting out that bottom three, but Cardiff again had a couple of late ones themselves. Sunderland's probably the interesting one, guys, isn't it, in terms of what's happened there in the last week and then the subsequent loss yesterday to Coventry. I don't think the natives are particularly happy up in the northeast at the moment.
No, that's a bad start for Mick Beale, who's gone in there. There was talk of him not being a man, a lot of Sunderland fans wanted. Obviously, Tony Mowbray was happy there, but then there was talk of sort of Will Steele and managers that had done well on the continent coming in. And all of a sudden, you've got a guy who's had less than half a good season at QPR, done okay at Rangers, but is sacked from there after not being able to compete with Celtic. But that was against Ange Postecoglou, Celtic, who were sort of one for the ages at the moment. But you come in there and you're hoping to get a good start at home just before Christmas, and you get turned over 3-0 in your first home game. And I think it's going to be a long battle to win some of those fans around.
And you reference QPR there. They were at home yesterday to Southampton, and you probably want to keep half an eye on our friends at Southampton, because they're...
Yeah, it does seem interesting how little has been spoke about Southampton, doesn't it? When they're like 16, it does just seem Leeds, I think maybe because Leeds have such a dominant voice on social media, mainstream media, because they are just the biggest fan base by a massive distance in this league, that it's just, all you hear about is them. But I'd say Southampton, considering they lost... Did they lose 3 on the bounce or 4 on the bounce? I can't remember. They lost at least 3 on the bounce, didn't they? And now they've only lost 4 all season, and they're 7 points off us and 15 unbeaten. They're definitely on their way, aren't they?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say we played them at a good down there. We played them at the right time, didn't we?
Yeah. But then, you know, again, looking at that league table, there we are still 7 points clear of both Leeds and Southampton, and courtesy of our good friend Chris Rand, he'd put together this chart. Again, apologies for those listening on podcasts, but what Chris has put together is a historic view of the last 10 years, from 2014-2015 season of the Championship, the points that various teams have accrued over the first half of that season. And there is only, to my eyes, one team that's got more points than us at this point in the season. That was Wolves in 2017, who then went on to get promoted. But Leicester being very much an outlier at this point in the season. But it just goes to show there, doesn't it, to both of you, the point that this is, and as Kieran McKenna was understandably keen to point out after the match yesterday, is we are still in a ridiculously good position historically, and also from where we were this point last season to be in the position we are. I think everyone just needs to take the result, take it on the chin, and just look at the slightly bigger picture for the time being, don't we?
Yeah, well, if you look, we play 23 games, 52 points. If we win 14 of our next 23, so sort of basically 2 out of every 3 games, we'll get that, just that alone, without taking draws into account, takes us to 94 points. So we are in an incredible position, and it is just a case of just if you win all the games you should win in the second half of the season, so your sort of home games against bottom half teams, away games against the lower reach teams, you're probably 6 or 7 points short of where you need to be. And you've just got, and if you can pick those up against top half teams away from home, top half teams at home, you're going to get over the line. So you just have to look at it sort of one game at a time. You see who's coming up, you try and get the win, you just try and keep the gap. Ultimately, it's not us versus Leeds or us versus Southampton in a playoff final tomorrow. It is, they need to accumulate 7 points more than us over half a season. That's a lot of points for them to get, as long as we don't just totally collapse, which I don't see us doing with the squad we've got, with the manager we've got, and the sort of the players who have done this before. We're now in that stage of the season where we probably are got to be managing fitness for a few weeks to get us through to the other side of it, and then hopefully can end the season, obviously probably not with as many points as last year, but on that sort of run where we just become relentless through the second half of the season. That's what we'll be working towards now.
Yeah. Big, as we said at the start, big transfer window incoming. Very, very big, just to give that, you know, the squad a little pep, a little refresh, I think. I mean, Leicester's just unprecedented. I mean, we forget about Leicester, I know, but it's just unprecedented. I think I saw somewhere it's the best start any second-tier club has had in 74 seasons or something like that. It's absolutely mad, isn't it? But, yeah.
If you think, Reading have got the second-tier points record, or the championship points record the Premier League, with 106 points. Leicester are currently on track for 116, 10 more points than that. And no one's ever even got close to that 106. I don't think anyone's got more than like 101.
No, I don't think so.
So
no,
you're talking... They're like 20 points ahead of probably the second best team in
sort of ever, yeah. which is incredible.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it's nuts. But yeah, I think we don't need to worry. Well, worry about them on Tuesday, but then forget about them. Well,
we just need to worry. We just need to worry about January. Us, don't we? Yeah, just need to worry about us and getting enough points from our games.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah. And so, thanks again, Chris, for that graphic. Hopefully, it's a bit of a positive note for everyone who managed to get a look at it. And on that upward note, a little word from our sponsors.
Innovation Labs is business hub and co-working space with strategic locations across Suffolk. Our aim is to foster innovation, entrepreneurship, business growth, and the development of an AI centre of excellence in Suffolk. Monthly hot desks are available from just £79. For more info, head to innovationlabsgroup.com or contact info@innovationlabsgroup.com. Innovation Labs, providing support for businesses across Suffolk. Locations in Stowmarket, Ipswich, Sudbury, Woodbridge, with more support.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like home comforts. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee, and terms apply. See McDonald's.com.
Whether you need a VPN to protect you while online, to allow you to change your worldwide location virtually, or maybe a bit of both, NordVPN gives you the freedom to do so. NordVPN also allows you to stream TV shows, films, and even sporting events which aren't available in your local region, changing to a country which is showing that content, meaning you can switch as seamlessly as a Kira McKenna in-game tactical tweak with just one click. But that's not all. NordVPN can also look after you while online, preventing your card details and passwords from falling into the wrong hands, safeguarding your personal and sensitive information from harm. Think of it as a cyber Sam Morsey, offering protection to your own personal back four, but with far fewer yellow cards. NordVPN is available for the price of a cup of Bovril per month, and one account can be used across 6 different devices. Visit nordvpn.com/Blue Monday or click the link in the podcast description for more information about the offer and a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee trial period. You'll also be helping out the pod by subscribing.
And just following on from that, I've got a few more plugs to do in terms of Christmas shows, actually, because we, a bit like the Ipswich Town squad, we've got some rotation coming up, but we're all over it in the next week or so. So following on from the Leicester match, we have a Leicester reaction show on Wednesday. I know everyone loses complete track of what day's which, etc. So Wednesday the 27th is our Leicester reaction and QPR preview show, 8 o'clock Wednesday night. Friday, which is the night of the QPR game, I think we have a live reaction post-match on Friday after the QPR match, and then following New Year's Day there is a reaction to the Stoke game on Tuesday the 2nd. So I won't be testing everyone, but Wednesday the 27th, 8 p.m, Friday the 29th, post-match, Tuesday the 2nd, 8 p.m. So we're hopefully fully covered in terms of reaction and pre-match and reaction and reaction. So that's what we've got coming up in the next week or so. And obviously on top of that, we've got all the interviews, etc., that the guys have done between them. They're all on the YouTube and can be picked up on the YouTube. They're all on YouTube and can be picked up on the various podcast streams. And also, we have at least one winner to announce. We had our Metsala Designs Wes Burns print was won by gentleman Joe Purbrook. Has won that. And also we have a winner for the shirt giveaway, which was our promo for the last week or so. Rich has advised me that he's just waiting to hear back from the winner of that, but that will be announced. The winner of that will be announced as a win. But yeah, thank you very much for everyone that entered and assisted us in getting our subscriptions, etc. done. And as ever, please like and subscribe and all that funky stuff. Leave the reviews, etc., etc. Going on to questions, we had a mountain of questions coming in. I don't know whether people had been on the eggnog and were getting a bit leery with the reactions to the match yesterday. But you know, it was old school Blue Monday, mailbag question time, and I've managed to hopefully compile them into some sort of logical categorization, shall we say. There were some relating to the match, there were some relating to transfer windows, there were some relating to what happens between now and the end of the season, really. So guys, I will throw these out there. Please forgive me if I don't manage to do it in turn, because I'll lose track of where I'm at. But in terms of yesterday's match, I know we've gone through it quite a lot actually, but just very, very briefly, Jacob asked, were there any changes in hindsight you'd have made? Joe, I know you'd reference Wolfenden, but could we maybe have done with an extra body in the middle of midfield? Would maybe some Taylor legs in there?
I think it's very difficult because we set ourselves up to play the way we do, and I don't think we're going to be able to flick a switch to sort of be like, actually, Leeds a tough game. We need to set up more negatively because everything we do is geared around how we play. So I don't think that extra body in the midfield is something that would even be considered, let alone done, because we'd then lose something in the attacker trade. Everything will fall down if one thing is moved out of place there. But obviously, you look at the performance, you're saying Luongo wasn't in the game, and it's like maybe Jack Taylor would have been better in there because a little bit more legs coming backwards. But I didn't see the team, and other than sort of wolfing in for Axe, which is understandable, I didn't see that thing, oh, I wouldn't have done this, we should have done this or that instead. I think it was just, this is how we were going to go out, and we hope we get that extra bit of luck. We hope we quieten the crowd or we get the early goal, and then it's a totally different game, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, what a question that we had from both Matt and Nick, Dave, was about the tactics yesterday. Was it a tactical error by McKenna, Matt asked? Was it the right, or was it the right tactics not followed by the players? And then similarly, Nick asks, are our players capable of playing that brand of football against a Premier League standard team, in effect?
We spoke at the start, didn't we? I think not many teams will go to Leeds and try to go head to head like we did, pretty much, let's face it, pretty much same formation, 4-2-3-1. Not many teams will go there and try and pull that off. And because they've got better play, you know, no question. They've got Premier, you know, up against a Premier League, certainly front four, midfield, you know, right the way through the team. They've got better players than we have. So, yeah, but as Joe quite rightly said, that would have so knocked us off our sort of our usual game plan that I'm not sure we're sort of capable of going any other way, really. I get it that perhaps some legs from additional legs from Taylor in midfield giving you a little bit more mobility in there, but yeah, they would just totally nullify the way we play. So very much as we've said, look, right the way through this podcast, you know, almost yesterday was a free hit. You've lost 3 points. There was a fear certainly from me that we could have gone to 6 or 7 or whatever at one stage, but you know, really, really move on from there, I think.
And I think as well, McKenna pointed out in his post-match interview, we played this way at Southampton, we played this way at Middlesbrough, we played this way at Middlesbrough and Watford in the last week or two and come away with 9 points from those three games. I think Leeds are a step above, aren't they, in terms of the personnel, as you point out there, Dave.
And it's the narrative as well, the narrative of the game. You know, they're supposedly, you know, been chased, they see us, they've got, you know, chasing us down. I was on a Leeds podcast in the week, LS1, I think it was, and yesterday was their season, pretty much. You know, they're building up to it. That's the vibe I was getting. They're absolutely their season. Oh, if we don't beat you, I think that's what it'll be. You know, still 10, but that's our season done almost. So, the game was so hyped up. The narrative was so hyped up for that game that it was always going to be a tough ask. No matter what system we played yesterday.
Yeah. I think Neil asked, and I think you alluded to it earlier, Joe, was yesterday the perfect time, if not the opposition, to throw in a poor performance and result? And as I say, it's just how we react to it, isn't it, really? James asks, Joe, just to go on with that. What's the biggest lesson or takeaway from the defeat?
I guess you just got to execute our plans better, don't you? I think that's the lesson, but I think we know that anyway. You can't give the ball away there and be caught in transition against these teams because they're so quick. But we are an all or nothing team. We play a high press, a high line, and that's just how we're going to be. But maybe it's indicative that maybe there is if we could add a little bit more quality to the squad, which I'm sure we'll be desperately trying to do in the January transfer window, that'll help to push us forward a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. And finally, just to draw a line at Cheeky Jim in our Telegram group, he asks, are Leeds a bang average Premier League side doing mediocre in the Championship or a good Championship team that haven't got as many points as us? Right. That'll do for Leeds. I think we've done that to death. So moving on, as you sort of spoke about there, Joe, in terms of January transfer windows. And as you said earlier, Dave, it's looking even more important now as you look over your shoulder and see Southampton and Leeds creeping a little bit closer. And as we spoke about earlier about Stansfield, and as we found out post-match that Dane Scarlett is being recalled rather than sent back to Spurs. It's been reported that he's been recalled by Spurs due to the fact that they're going to be losing a few players in January themselves with the various competitions that are going on around the world. Mullet's asked us, do we expect Stansfield to be an easy deal to do? And with Scarlett going back, do we expect Freddie to move now or in the summer? Which one of you guys wants to cover that?
Yeah, I personally think Freddie will move now. He's just getting so few minutes at the moment, isn't he? And it just seems almost pointless in being here when you're still a player with sort of residual value that a League One team would be desperate to sign to get in to help them with their promotion push. He's not going to play a part for us this season. We've seen that over the last 5 months. He's not deemed up to what is required, it seems, by Kieran McKenna and the management team. So you try and move him on. Dane Scarlett one, it's frustrating because the whole loan seems to have been so badly managed by Tottenham, so to speak, where they held on to him all the way through pre-season. Then gave him a few minutes in the League Cup tie, which then meant when he came here, he then couldn't play in the League Cup ties. He then went away for the international break, so he didn't get a chance to try and get his foot in the door. So that cost him games. And now we're at a stage where in, 2 weeks' time, we're playing AFC Wimbledon in the FA Cup game, a game where he could start, and they're going to pull him back and effectively, they just cost him any chance of getting a start here. And yeah, he obviously hasn't been able to do enough to get into the league team, but that's no great shame when you see the form of sort of Broadhead, Hurst, Chaplin, even the sort of harnesses, Jackson's coming off the bench, but Wes Burns starting. So it was a tough role to get in, but he's been done no favours in that. So now it's a case of just trying to, we'll need to replace him straight away. Hopefully Stansfield can be that player that we can get in straight away, or there's somebody else, another. There was talk with a Brendan Vasquez, but it seems like he's going to be well above our sort of station when you see the other teams linked there. I wonder, in the way that Jay Stansfield is one we've been in for in previous windows, if there's other players like that. One name that sort of jumps to mind is Colby Bishop, who we were in for in the summer, had a couple of bids rejected for him. Is that one we revisit? Yeah, he's probably going to be £2 or 3 million, and it's a lot of money for a League One forward to step up. But if you were making a change and you're bringing on Colby Bishop or Freddie Ladapo, who would you prefer to see on there when you're trying to have somebody mirror the role of George Hurst? And but ultimately, nothing's going to come cheap for us this window. There's not going to be a £1 million player that no one knows about because we're a big swinging League One club who can do what we want to do and and sort things out. We are now seen as a team on the brink of the Premier League, and our negotiations will, I'm sure, sort of take that into account.
I suppose, Dave, that's the difficulty, isn't it, in terms of the recruitment and the type of player we look at. And this is no disrespect to Colby Bishop at all, but when we were recruiting in League One with more than half an eye on the Championship, you go out and recruit Broadhead, Hurst, Luongo, Clark in January with pretty much knowing that they are able to make the step up should you be fortunate enough to do it. Now we find ourselves in a very similar position, albeit a league above. What type of player, realistically, are you able to buy a player or recruit a player that you can again use should you happen to be up in the Premier League? Or are you, in effect, throwing away 2 million? Again, I don't want to sound this disruptive to someone like Colby. Let's say a player like Colby Bishop. As Joe said, you give a club £2 million, £3 million for a player to hopefully assist you to make that step. But then next year, should you happen to make it, are they now the Freddie Ladapo of this year, if you see what I mean?
I think you're dead right. I think that's absolutely a really good observation. That's spot on, really. Yeah, you're really now going to recruit someone to get you really to give the squad the impetus to, you know, if it is someone like a Colby Bishop, to effectively be a like for like for George Hurst and then also hopefully maybe even Stansfield as well, to just get you over the line. And then it's a totally different scenario once you get to, you know, once and if you get up, it's totally different, isn't it? You've just got to look again, haven't you? You know, if we get up this season, yeah, this time, you know, we'll be sitting here perhaps doing the Christmas pod this time next year. I think our first 11 and certainly our squad will have a totally different look about it.
I guess you almost have to look as though there's a third league, isn't there? So when we're in League One, we sign players who would be able to cut it in the Championship. Now we're in the Championship, we almost need to sign players who we think might be able to cut it as a top six Championship player. I know we are currently a top two Championship side, but you're signing players that you think can be top Championship players, because you just are not able to sign players who are Premier League players. No. There's just no way you can sign those at this stage. So you're signing players that you hope, if you don't go up this year, are still good enough to be top six Championship players next year, who when you come to sell, they might be able to be sold to a parachute payment relegated team. I guess that's the sort of height of, well, not the height of your ambitions, but probably the height of the realistic ambition that you can have this window. Players that could, it's like, are these players able to be, like Jay Stansfield is probably one who you think, yeah, he could be a top six Championship player. He looks like he's got the sort of bits to do that, but is he a Premier League player? Well, if he was a Premier League player, Fulham wouldn't even be countenance and selling him for a sort of fee that we could afford.
Yeah, that's interesting. And that sort of links into a question we had from Tom about, with Scarlett being recalled, do we now need two attacking players? I think we probably do, because we already thought we may need one in any case. Ed asks, do we need, and probably on the back of yesterday, do we need a little bit more dynamism or pace in our midfield, centre midfield? It's interesting, as I said earlier, about Luongo, Dave, staying now for January, whether that does alleviate the sudden urge to need another centre midfielder, or does a performance like yesterday highlight that we might need some legs, given the relative ages of the guys in there?
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't necessarily think so. I think, you know, we won't come up against a midfield two, I don't think, quite like it, although you've got Harry Winks on coming up on Tuesday and whoever. But I think we're fairly well served in that position. And I think, well, Don Ball came on for Morsey yesterday, a little very rare cameo for Don Ball yesterday. And against teams perhaps not of the Southampton, not of the Leicester or Leeds ilk, you know, he could probably, yeah, someone like him can probably come in and do a job. And certainly I think Jack Taylor again has had little cameos. I mean, we know all about his goal scoring attributes and stuff like that. But I think, you know, as time goes on, he's gonna obviously, you know, more experience of being in and around the team, and I'm sure he'll get a lot of in game play between now and the end of the season, and I think he could step up quite easily.
Yeah. Just interesting if they do just get another, and just another, as you say, Ball play just today and got his booking, and yeah, whether they ride it out or whether they, as Joe says, you know, there would have been, as in relation to Stansfield, there will be names that would have been after previously. It's just whether they're still on our radar now. We've made a little bit of an edge up through the leagues, and probably ahead of expectations where we hoped we would be. Whether those players have, you know, dropped off our radar a little bit.
Yeah.
So thanks to those guys for those questions. Thanks to Adam and Neil, who had very similar questions in terms of transfers and bits and pieces. As you can probably understand, people are very much asking questions along the same lines about attacking areas and centre midfield areas, and whether yesterday's match stroke performance would alter those in any way. I can't really imagine that it would have. Moving on to Boxing Day, Paul asks if you can see any tactical changes for Leicester. Is there an argument for a deeper midfielder to combat their potency on the break, Joe?
I don't think there'll be any tactical changes there. Might be some slight tweaks in there, but I don't see any major changes for it. No,
not at home. No.
You might just play a little bit deeper and maybe have a lesser high line and maybe not quite as high a press, but you're not going to be doing anything fundamentally different because ultimately what we've done has earned us 52 points from 23 games and we're going to we can't move away from that, can we? And I think it's when you look at teams when they go to the Premier League, someone like Burnley, for example, and they've kept doing what they want to do. And yeah, they've had some sort of chastening days like we had yesterday, but ultimately they need to get better at what they want to do so that when they do have the games against teams of a similar standard, they can then beat them, which is what happened to them yesterday when they went away to Fulham to win. And yeah, they might go down, but I don't think you can just fundamentally change the way you want your team to play just because you're playing better teams. You just need to try and do it better.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Especially being at home, you know, we're attacking away from home, but we're attacking at home, aren't we? It's what we do. It's what's brought us the amount of points, the amount of goals, both for and against so far this season. So, yeah, as Jason, I think there'll be tweaks rather than an actual...
And with the lead Leicester have got in the table, they put their strongest team out yesterday, beat Rotherham 3-0. They could easily just say, look, we're going to make 8 changes for the game on Tuesday because we're so far ahead. We'd rather just rest the squad till the 29th game and do that. They've earned the right to be able to do something like that. And if they do, fair play. And thank you.
Are you saying they'd rather us go up with them Leeds?
I don't think it's about who they want to go up. I think it's more just the way the fixtures are falling.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
They just need... You can't sort of try and be too clever and be like, oh, we'll rest players against Rotherham. Because then if you lose that one, then you then put loads of pressure on this game. Where now, we talk about us, oh, it's a free hit for us. It's the biggest free hit going for Leicester, isn't it?
Yeah,
they'll probably draft in Vardy and Iheanacho or something.
Question from Jamie here is, given, in his opinion, every player is performing above and beyond their ceiling to get us where we currently find ourselves, do you think, Dave, that where the team currently finds itself is sustainable with the current squad?
Yeah, it's a very good question. There was another question, I think, well, this might well come up about, you know, obviously playing the second stream of games against, you know, teams perhaps wising up against us. I think we've said, you know, yeah, I think the squad needs a lift. Any new players, any new, you know, transfers, you know, and they're going to be players of a reasonable, we know, you'd think a reasonable championship or higher end championship stature. So that's just going to give the squad, going to give the whole squad a lift and the whole a place to lift. Not that we necessarily need, it's an odd one, it's not necessarily needed. Look, we lost 4-0 to, let's face it, a very, very, very good, you know, a very, very, very good side. So yeah, it's a difficult one, but you know, any new transfers coming in are just going to give the squad and the whole and the place hopefully the boost, not a lift, the boost to carry us through, as Joe said, you know, with those 14 wins, is it? Yeah, carry us through to achieve what we need to.
Yeah, well, as Mark's talking about the number of wins, etc., Mark asks that, will we win 16 of our next 23 league games? If not, how many do you predict us to win? As you said, Joe, you know, it's a question of trying to win the ones that you should be winning, yeah, picking a draw up where you can and seeing where you find yourself, isn't it?
But even if you think, bearing in mind we've lost, 3 games in 23, if we were to win 13, draw 5, lose 5, which is a significantly worse record than what we've had in the first half of the season, that takes us to 96 points.
It's crazy, isn't it?
So we're in it's such an incredible position, and chances like this won't come around again. Like, I'm not saying we'll never get promoted, but we are never going to be in a stronger position going into the second half of the season as we are now, because no team other than Leicester has done in the last 20 years. So it's such a big opportunity for the club to really go for it. And I've got no doubt that McKenna will be imploring that on Ashton, and that zero doubt that Ashton will be putting that onto the owners. And the owners know that, cool, we are so far ahead of schedule, and even if you can go up for one season and come back down, what that will do to the club, the town and everything around it will just give you such a lift and such a boost and make all their long-term planning so much easier.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting because Chris Rand, again, he asked the question, is it possible for a team to be outclassed by the half dozen teams on parachute money, yet be so consistent and dominant in the other 75% of matches that they get enough points to make automatic promotion regardless. And I think that's where we find ourselves, Dave, isn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. Flat, what they call them, flat track bullies, don't they call them in cricket? Is that the term, I think? Not
can
quite
we be the,
that. Yeah,
can we be the Graham Hick of the championship? Yeah.
The Graham Hick, love that.
Across too many Merv Hughes's.
his kryptonite, wasn't it? Don't forget, as we said earlier, we've been to Southampton, played them at the right time, got 3 points there. So, you know, we've got two more games against Leicester starting Tuesday, one against Southampton. Look, there's going to be tough games. There's going to be tough games along the way. The one up the A140 in April. Look, we all local derby. We know that's going to be. You know, we all know what it was like last weekend. That's going to be a toughie. And others are going to be pushing up towards the playoffs. So, as Joe said, the points in the bag. When you consider the points that we've got in the bag, and you know the drop off we can allow. To accrue the 94, 95 points that we think will get us there. It's just looking so good, isn't it? It really is. So I think we've got to very much be so positive still.
And finally, a couple of questions here from Carl and Mark, which I'll link together. Is Carl asks, do you feel teams have started to work out our system and should we make a change to it for the second half of the system? And Mark asks, what are the biggest improvements to make from the first half going into the second half?
Can't show you.
I don't think we'll be making changes to the system. The system works, doesn't it? Works better than any other system I've seen Ipswich Town play with for the other 30 odd years I've been coming to the club. So no, and the tweaks, I guess one of the only tweaks would be the type of player in the roles, maybe sort of like a Connor Chaplin. Maybe you have somebody who's more, gets up and down the pitch a bit more than the Connor Chaplin, but I don't think for a second you'll be dropping him out. Maybe someone, I don't know, maybe you go a little bit more orthodox with the sort of centre-back and don't push the right-back on so much from there. And I guess it's just the makeup of the central midfield pairing is the only thing there. Mm. I guess the plan would have been previously for Jack Taylor to sort of take over from Massimo Luongo, which changes things slightly, but I don't see that particularly happening this season now with the way Luongo's been. So yeah, I think it'll only be sort of personnel and the different styles that personnel has, if that makes sense, as opposed to ripping the system up. So someone like, maybe if in games later in the year, you might take a Nathan Broadhead out and put a Marcus Harness in because he is just a better off the ball player than Broadhead is. Obviously a much superior on the ball player, but it might be actually when we'd want to play games where we think they're going to be tougher games, you might maybe make a change like that to try and neutralise them a little bit more as opposed to go out and try and necessarily outscore them.
Yeah, you're right. It's going to be personnel tweaks rather than tactical tweaks. You know, tactically, it's got its 52 points from 23 games. Well, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
And I think if there are any tactical changes, they'll be so imperceptible to our layman's eyes, won't they? That they'll be happening, but not.
Sean will keep us posted.
Yeah, exactly.
And also, these things do happen quite gradually as well, though. So it might be that something is changing slowly. And when you look at the team in 10 games from now to 10 games previously, something has changed, but it's just been a gradual change, which has just worked its way around.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much for that. Apologies to those of you who I haven't managed to get around to the question. As you can probably understand, there were a few that were along similar lines, but hopefully we've covered off the majority of them. But I say again, thanks very much for sending them through, and you know, congratulations to the Royal Mail for getting them to us in time this time of year. One last one from Romeo. What are the Blue Monday boys hoping for from Father Christmas this year? Joe, do you want to go first? Don't say 3 points on Boxing Day, please. That doesn't count.
No, but if somebody could find me one of the two bird shirts from the last 25 years that I haven't managed to get hold of and put one of those through my chimney, that would be great. But they seem rarer than elves poo at the moment. So
what was that? What shirt was it?
It's the red and black one from the 92-93 season. The black
the Blackburn Rovers.
Yeah, that one. Milton. And then the black one we wore at Rangers, a TXU Energy one, that one, and then a red one, which we was supposed to wear against Coventry in the Premier League, but we didn't actually wear in the end. So I'm not too worried about that, but Green King one. But if either of those three want to find their way to my doorstep, then I will be very, very grateful.
Yeah, just Star Wars Lego for me, really.
Oh, right. Well, the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah, the one I saw, and I took little Rosie to Smith's the other day. That's there for like, it's like £600. I did have to look twice. I must admit.
Yeah. Yeah. And the rest, I think some of them, didn't they? When you step up through the levels, you're looking at £1,000 or some Lego.
Yeah, absolutely. By the way, did you see that thing about Darren Ambrose and his Lego collection?
I saw the headline.
Oh, so, do you see it, Joe?
Yeah, that he's. I know he's a Lego builder. He's got like a Lego Instagram account. I can't really talk. Yeah, no, he's got like here, not quite on camera. I've probably got about £2,500 worth of Lego there.
Oh, here we go. I forgot Joe was a Lego. Yeah, Darren Ambrose. Yeah, incredible. They've actually got a. I think they do a vlog on it and stuff like that. Yeah, yeah. The Darren Ambrose Lego 7 or something like that. He's got like five kids, hasn't he, and stuff.
Mm.
Yeah, incredible stuff.
Bloody hell. Lego.
If he'd have found that Lego a few years ago, he might not have had so many.
Legos, barbershops. He's got his finger in a lot of pies, isn't he? Isn't that
Oh, dear. Yeah.
Well, wonderful stuff. Well, I think that will pretty much do us. I think we've gone above and beyond on Christmas Eve. It's Christmas Eve morning. There's wrapping to do. Joe's got to start boiling his sprouts ready for their 12-hour stint in the pot before he can... Get
that recipe out there, Joe. Get that sprout gratin recipe. We need to see it.
Any Christmas messages from you guys before I click the button?
Just hopefully 2024 can be as good as 2023 has been. What a fantastic year supporting Ipswich Town it's been.
Yeah, absolutely. Ditto that. Absolutely incredible. If 24 can be half as good, almost as good as 23 there. We're in for an exciting ride.
Wonderful. Well, thank you very much, guys. Thank you, everyone who's watched or listened to us today and over the previous weeks and months of this year. Have a fantastic Christmas. Have a couple of days not worrying or thinking about football if you can. Enjoy your time with your family and friends. Merry Christmas from everyone at the Blue Monday podcast.
It's the promotion running. Everyone is gathered round to watch. The McNuggets share boxes are there, offering much needed distraction. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, but in you swoop to steal the last nugget and claim all 3 points. Oh, and there is the Harry Clark fist pump to celebrate. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in at participating restaurants.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.